we need is a quorum. We do have, I don't have any apologies that need to say that. And by the looks of things, at this stage, we have 6 people. Some are having tea. And I would like to start. And I'm going to start now without the quorum, because we only need the quorum as we go through.
Guided by Mr. Herman.
supposed to prevent me from getting into any pitfalls. Our researcher has been overlooked, but I didn't recognize you were doing so well. So,
Right.
Okay.
Motion of Desirability, Accompanies Amendment Bill, B1422. That in the opinion of the committee legislation is desirable to amend the Companies Act 2008, so effect certain legal, technical, and grammatical amendments in order to ensure the proper application and administration of the principal act subsequent to its commencement, to correct certain errors resulting in inconsistency and ambiguity in the principal act, to establish a proper foundation for certain necessary regulations, to continue the mechanisms established under Section 335 of the Companies Act 1973, which allow for the transfer of registration of foreign companies to the jurisdiction of the Republic, to further provide for companies trading under insolvent circumstances, to extend the grounds of disqualification as a director. Can we stop all of this banging? To provide for the terms of office of members of the company's tribunal, and to provide for matters connected therewith. We now begin and we go through the amendments. If you can keep with you, these are the amendments then, BA 2010, that we will be going through.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're adopting it today, but we're reading from here. And it's in here, so you have your references to follow. We went through both documents yesterday, and people cross-referenced. Where they had a problem, they raised it. And only in certain instances, Honorable Harris asked if he could bring back some amendments.
No, I'm just very happy to give you a moment to give you because I just want to clarify. So you're putting the amendment to close one of the CO data amended by close one of the door. Is this correct? That's the question before you. Yes. That's okay.
That board members could just do that cross-referencing it. There were errors. We picked them up. But there were proposals which were not in writing. Am I correct? Yes. Again, I'll just go to on page. On page 5, line 38, to omit a fair value and to substitute fairly valued. Agreed? On page, on number 2, on page 5, line 40, to omit a fair market value and to substitute fairly valued. Agreed? Number 3, on page 5, from line 50, to omit paragraph D. Agreed?
Agreed.
4. On page 6, from line 31, to omit paragraph J. Agreed?
Agreed.
5. On page 7, from line 25, to omit paragraph T.
Agreed.
6. On page 7, in line 43, to omit item 4 of Schedule 2 and to substitute Schedule 1. Line, 7. On page 7, from line 61, to omit subparagraph 4 Roman 2 and to substitute a pre-existing company was structured and governed before the letter of the double A Arabic A is it and small Roman I that is has been deleted effective date or deleted again, double B, Arabic, small Roman 2, that deleted, date it was converted to a company in terms of Schedule 2. 8. On page 8 in line 47, to omit notes and comma box. Now, give us your proposal, please.
Thank you, Reed. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Arabic A.
further clarification. The proposal is to omit paragraph A of clause 2 from this bill. Is correct. I don't find clause A.
Yes, I'm listening.
I don't find paragraph A. Okay, we have an alternative proposal in our amendment. In our amendment.
I just want to make sure. Honorable Ambrosini, some people walked in late. Do they all have this? Because you know these have only just been distributed. Does everyone have Wednesday, the 9th of March? This, I must say, only arrived on my desk. At 1:34. No need to look surprised.
I received it last night.
Well, you may have had the benefit of sleeping here. Let's not go through that. I also have a husband and I look after him. Now, can we move on?
Yeah.
Clearly, some of you don't have the same concerns. We've got it. That's not the issue, and we were fooled. The committee secretary did have it earlier. Although I haven't seen it, I was aware of it. And I instructed him to send this to our consultant. It went with a request to have her responses back by two. She complied with that. So, lead us, please.
So, it's me, Shadow Minister of Finance. Shadow Minister, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, let me clarify that these are joint amendments from the Democratic Alliance, the Freedom, Qatar Freedom Party, and the Freedom Front Plus. And this is one.
I'm not taking it from three. You may have sent it to me as three. Each one of them will concur with you.
To shortcut the process.
No, no, no. You just reminded me not to shortcut it, so let's go ahead. From yourself, you're from the IMP. Everyone has got it in front of them. I have no doubt you will be seconded. Can we agree on that basis? Thank you.
Yes. I think that it's part of it's beyond technicality, it's part of the presentation to justify what the committee should consider. Mm-hmm. I should be allowed to make the point that this is only one of seven amendments. We have been involved in this process under your guidance to the best we could, and we hope that our contribution, as minuscule as it is, can be taken on board. We have looked at the input from the consultant. This is not an input of legality; it's an input of desirability. I mean, at a certain point, we are the masters of desirability. This is what we want. And rightly or wrongly, we bear the final responsibility of, before our constituency, of determining what we want and the laws we adopt. And we hope that there will be recognition that if this process is to be inclusive, some minuscule give and take should take place. So these are five minuscule amendments which need to be looked upon and to meet with some degree of flexibility. What this amendment says, it maintains the test of probability, but immediately says no one is responsible for one and for no one else. The parent is not responsible for the child is not responsible for the parent, and no one is responsible for the country. And it comes from a cycle of submission, and I formally move that this amendment be adopted in substitution of the one before us.
What you need to do, Honorable Ambrosini, in the first instance, it talks here, it refers to the Principal Act, am I right? In the Principal Act here, originally, it's on page 36, under its solvency and liquidity test, all right? And you're looking at the sub-clause here, A.
right? And in the sub-clause here, it deals with the issue of the assets of a company or if the company is a member of a group of companies, the aggregate assets, are we on the right one? Yes. Of the company as fairly valued, equal or equal or exceed the liabilities of the company, etc., etc., and again, aggregate is mentioned. In sub-clause 1, you're not proposed, one at the top, by deleting the following words. Is that what you're looking at from subsection 1A, or if the company is a group of companies, the aggregate assets of the company, and or if the company, etc., etc.? And what you are suggesting is that before the words by the substitution and add the word and before the words by the substitution. So can you read it as you would like it to be read?
Madam Chair, it would read after the deletion. One says that it is the assets of the company is fairly valued, equal or exceed the liability of the company is fairly valued.
Right, that is your proposal, which we actually, is it not quite clear to me here, although I want the gist of it personally, all right? Mm. Now, you put the proposal, can, I'll just get here, if it's seconded, and then I will hear other proposals. Seconded by the DA. Yes, I don't think motivated. You know, seconded, you would agree with that, would you not? Anyone else seconded it immediately? Yes. Thank you. Honourable Sir David?
Thank you, Chair Professor. Although the Honourable Ambrosinia is already crying that they must be supported even before starting with the actual work. So I think that when you look through this, in particular that section 4, the issue of the company, the aggregate assets, the issue of the company does not clearly indicate whether it is dealing with the holding company or the mother company or not. But I think that if that clarification is going to deal with the issue of the company itself, it's fine. I think that let's remove that aggregate. If it creates confusion, yes, I think that we'll go along with that. Yes. And then, but they don't must not expect any concession from
what you're really saying then is the aggregate, which we were having problems with yesterday. We're not too sure. Honourable Vandermeerder.
Thank you, Chair. I'm in agreement on the lack of expectations that should be had. But I think here, Chair, the advice from our advisor is relevant because she has indicated that her view is that if this amendment will remove existing uncertainty. I think it's useful for us to look at this unnumbered document entitled University of Cape Town Department of Commercial Law and so on. But just for absolute clarity, so they're seeking to reinstate, this proposal is seeking to reinstate this clause, but delete aspects of it. And I think we toyed with all those things during the course of the day, and so I would support the amendment.
Just ensure, but of course, I know it will be done even before the state president signs. There's no sort of technicality here that's going to prevent us from passing the bill onto the NCOP. Is that right, Mr. Advocate Hercules?
No, thank you.
There we are, you see, all these little mirrors and fears disappear, as we all agreed. Thank you. I hope now the technical teams are on board. Are you? Yeah. Thank you. Now we move. I'm the one who has to go very slow. Where is this now? Are we safely on clause 3? Now, guys, those of you who came in with amendments, please, you know who you are. When it comes up, put your hand up, please. Don't just put that mic on, please. Clause 3, on page 9, after lines 39 to insert, small Arabic A, now the substitution of subsection 4B, Roman small I items, double F and double G of the following items, respectively, double F. Security Services Act 2004, Act Number 36 of 2004, deleted all. DG, Banks Act, delete the comma. B, by the addition in subparagraph small Roman I of paragraph Arabic B of subsection 4, Arabic 4 of the following items. Double H, Local Government Municipal Finance Management Act 2003, Act Number 56, 2003. Double I, Small Arabic, Section 8 of the National Payment System, 8, Act 1998, Act Number 78 of 1998. Clause 6. So do you agree?
Yes.
You can't lose sight of that. Clause 6. 1. On page 11 from line 58 to mid paragraph F. Do you agree?
Yes.
Clause 7. 1. On page 12 to midline 17 and 18 and to substitute small Arabic B. By the substitution in paragraph small Arabic A of subsection Arabic 3 number for the words preceding subparagraph small Roman I of the following words. 2. On page 12, omit lines 20 and 21 and to substitute small Arabic C by the substitution in paragraph small Arabic B of subsection Arabic 3 for the words preceding subparagraph small Roman I of the following word. Clause 8. Do you agree? Sorry about that. 1. On page 13, in line 61, to omit body, corporate, and to substitute juristic person. Do you agree? Clause 9. 1. On page 14, from line 18, to omit paragraph small Arabic C. Do you agree? 2. On page 14, to omit lines 30 and 51, and to substitute. By the substitution in paragraph small Arabic C, of subsection Arabic 3 for the words preceding subparagraph the Roman I of the following words. Do you agree? 3. On page 14, term at lines 33 and 34 to substitute by the substitution in paragraph small Roman B of subsection 3 for the words preceding subparagraph 1 of the following words. We have then these two in direct speech symbols. Do you agree? Clause 10. On page 14, after line 41, 2 and 3, small Arabic B, and substitution and subjection. So surely I don't have to say all the small Arabic issues. You've got it in front of you. Now, someone tell me I have to say that.
No, Madam Chairman, I would suggest that if you would find your directing attention of the court of committee members of the section, not the section.
Yeah, I think so too. But you see how earnest I was in getting legal procedural advice, Honourable Ambrosini. No.
whole captain into a Latina attack.
Right. So does clause 10, 1, do you agree? Still on clause 10, number 2. Item 2, do you agree? Still on clause 10, item 3. Do you agree? New clause. 1. That the following be a new clause. Amendment of Section 22 of Act 71 of 2008. I'm only mentioning that because I happen to see it as something. Honourable Ambrosini.
I take you are putting this to the House. We have a proposal and alternative. And it has been submitted in writing, but I will read that. It's against the existing taste, and we move that from the existing taste of this clause. So it's predicated on the assumption of this clause. And against this clause, it would eliminate the words reckless, comma, with gross negligence from number, from sub-clause 1, and the underlying words always in trading under insolvency circumstances under clause 2. As we submit this clause to the committee, we are deeply aware that it has been an item greatly discussed and there are different views. So we feel, without having to motivate too much, that this is what, that these amendments will foster economic growth that translates into jobs by enabling our companies to get out of the sluggish environment which motivated moving from the 1973 to the 2008 Act, but has not gone far enough. The greatest companies in the world that have been created through what one could define as reckless and gross negligence, and I could give you 1,000 examples which I will spare you, and all of them while under trading while insolvent. This will have a chilling effect on an environment which is already risk averse and places the courts in the invidious position of determining how risky is too risky. And these are matters to be dealt with within the parameters of corporate governance between shareholders and directors. There are lots of breaks and fails within public companies. This will affect small people, small companies. So now that the company, the vehicle becomes more available to everyone, and the form to which they're going to do business, we need to unleash the genius and entrepreneurial capabilities of the South African people and not hinder it. We accept that there's been a view to the contrary. We ask for a concession. Concede to our views because that's part of the give and take, accepting that this man, that the other side of the argument may not necessarily like it.
Thank you. That is a proposal, but I'm going to request a slight break in both. You know, you yourself have listed it as 1 and 2. Now, I am going to read, in this case, from the our consultant. We have it all in front of you, but I will read it here. That is the very clause that we're on. I'm reading the first one here, sub-clause 1, dealing reckless with gross negligence. In Ms. Idenson's opinion, I quote, "I am not, however, in favour of the proposed amendment to sub-clause 1. That is the deletion of the word reckless with gross negligence. In my view, companies should be expressly prohibited from trading recklessly or with gross negligence, in the same way as they are expressly prohibited from carrying on business fraudulently or with a fraudulent intent. Similarly, the Commission should be entitled to issue a non-compliance notice in relation to all such forms of improper trading activities, not just fraudulent trading. In essence, I am not persuaded that reckless or grossly negligent trading should should be treated any differently to fraudulent trading. I would like us to vote, if we have to, or to reach an agreement by consensus on this matter. Our preference is always consensus, obviously. And I took your, the proposal you made in its broadest context of let's take us all into account and concede when necessary, and not, I'm looking at it broadly. So I put to you the yes, I'm going to get that coming now. Yeah, I just read the actual, the consultant. I'm going to put to you how we're going to deal with it, as I said, it's one and two. Now, we have one in additional clause 14, this is an amendment here, and section 22, proposed by, right now, the Honourable Ambrose. I put back to you, are there any comments? We have a proposer, do we have any seconders? And I'm dealing with the one issue now. Yes, that is?
Seconder.
The DA, you know, we're getting...
The DA is seconder.
Right, thank you. Honourable Albert?
Yes, the Bill of Travel for seconder.
Thank you. Honourable Hadebi, the ANC?
Thank you, Jefferson. As I promised my colleague that the next one I'm not going to agree with it. I'm honoring my promise. But Comrade Jefferson, definitely, we cannot allow, even if we have to stimulate the internet entrepreneurial spirit, but we cannot afford the people to deal recklessly with other people. So I don't think that as this constitutional democracy, we can allow a situation whereby the people can get away with murder. If I can make an example here. You know, in China, there was this guy who wanted to sell this infant meat, milk. So what they did, because of they wanted it to look rich and creamy, they put melanin in. So, and then they cut it off as a rich milk, and in the process killed a lot of children on the ground. So I don't think that we as a country can afford to have such reckless business practices in the name of entrepreneurial spirit. So I think that also at the same time, I think that even if the business is a startup company, definitely it must have its books in order so that wherever it makes debts, it must be able to repay those debts timely. So as the African National Congress, we cannot support that amendment. Thank you.
There are one or two speakers. You've given a position, but I'm just taking, I'll take three maximum on every, Honourable Barsa, and the last speaker will be yourself, Honourable Vandenberg.
No, one of the duties that we have to do as a committee of trade and industry is to conduct ourselves, as a country, in such a manner that we attract investment, international investment. So the way we conduct our business should be such that it, amongst other things, attract investment. And if we are seen to be condoning behaviors like reckless trading, that on its own does not give confidence in how companies do business in South Africa. So, alongside our group, the ANC does not support this.
And the very last one, and I do mean that, I am ruling this thing, will be yourself, Honourable Helen, because you have already proposed, right? I'm not proposed.
Thank you, Chair. Really, most of what I wanted to say has been covered by Mr. Honourable Member Hadele, but I just wanted to say that I don't think, for the record, in any way, entrepreneurship can be equated with recklessness and gross negligence. So I just don't think that argument is persuasive at all. I think recklessness and gross negligence is exactly that, and it doesn't relate at all, but equate to entrepreneurship.
Harris?
To take the contrary view, perhaps if I can speak about the example of my fiance who starts the business. She's an entrepreneur in Cape Town. She's using my capital to start up her business. I'm very happy she's doing it.
But
certainly, as a funder of her career, I can assure you she's being extremely reckless. But I support. There's a difference between the potential success of her business and her perceived recklessness. Exactly. The point is, Chair, my fiance is recklessly using my capital to start the business. I have no doubt it will succeed. I think our law should encourage that kind of behavior rather than discourage it.
I'm not even going to put comments in because I told myself this is your day, I will just try and leave. So we have got a proposal on the table of the one. Remember, I'm just putting the one first. We have got three people involved directly in proposing and seconding. I'm not sure how many others are. So unfortunately, I have to put this to a vote. So, are all those in favour of having this amendment here, in other words, to delete the words recklessly with gross negligence, raise your hands. One, two, three. Those not in favour, those abstaining, we then move to the same clause. The clause is passed, as is without the deletion. Number two, well, you know when I say number two now, I'm just referring to section 22. In subclause two, delete the words, or is trading under insolvent circumstances. I go again, just read what the... consultant has said here, which is of course the first paragraph there. I am in favour, right one, of the proposed amendment to subclause 2, that is, the deletion of the words or is trading under insolvent circumstances. As mentioned in my previous advice, this phrase is not defined and could lead to uncertainty and could be interpreted as including companies that are merely technically insolvent. That is the advice from the consultant. You now have already had a proposal. How many people are seconding the proposal? Two. I mean, well, it's three altogether, you know. Right, one, two, seconding. Do you wish to speak, Honourable Harris, now or later?
I'll just say
that
the Democratic
Alliance
seconded.
Honourable
Albert. Madam Chair, the Freedom Front also seconds the item. Thank you.
Are there any objections? Are there any objections? Honourable Hadebe and Honourable Coxie.
Honourable Chairperson, I think that the our advisor is saying that that one is not worth, is not to defy. What if we define it that we've already specified that it is trading or trading under technical insolvent circumstances? So that we define it clearly. That's what we're dealing with, because there's a difference between commercial insolvency and technical insolvency. If we can define that.
Look, just here, I know I
said
this whole thing myself, and I haven't had the chance. Study it, there's no good trying to study anything in the house. Can I just, before we close on the argument, ask DTI to go over that paragraph again? Don't even go down reckless now, we've done that.
I point of order. We are deliberating.
Well,
are not deliberating, we are considering and adopting.
Yes.
It's part of the
essentially, I'm not sure whether we can take submissions from people who are not members of this committee during the deliberative stage.
They can now consult.
But it's a submission.
Now, the consultant is someone we consulted with respect to what DTI has proposed. We have changed what was put in recently. All right? We didn't send everything to her. We simply sent your questions, sir, Honourable Ambrosini. But I will make a ruling. I am asking DTI, you will then take your decision. They are not taking your decision.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be very brief. We've spoken so much on our part, also on this issue. Maybe enough in a certain sense has been said, but with the greatest of respect, I would like to submit something for the honourable members. I think the problem that has arisen is that the reading of Subsection 2 takes place maybe in isolation. Subsection 2 must, as of necessity, be read together with Subsection 3 that follows immediately below. We are saying that should there not be a definition of what is trading under insolvent circumstances, in a sense, that very definition is contained in Subsection 3 below. If I may very, very briefly refer to it. If a company to whom a notice has been issued, there it is. And there is the definition. The company must show that it is able to pay its debts as they become due and payable in the ordinary course of business. This is my last sentiment, Madam Chair. If a company fails to satisfy that test, the company is not only technically insolvent. It is indeed insolvent in law because it is committing, in terms of the current insolvency law, a deed of insolvency, never mind being technically insolvent. So there is the definition. Sorry for having spoken again, Madam Chair. Thank you.
You needn't apologize when I've asked you to, otherwise you'll really find it difficult to operate. Now, I read this here, not today, but yesterday, because if you recall, the issue came up then, in fact. And it's the old, old story. You have DTI doing an explanation, you have our own consultants giving you advice. We have, in the past, not always taken the consultant's advice. Right now, you yourself didn't take her advice on reckless and whatever, because you operated as elected members of a constituency. Everyone sitting here who's going to vote or who's going to adopt is sitting here in that capacity. And in that capacity, you take advice. And it is up to you to accept or reject it in line with your party principles and constituency. So nothing is dishonourable. It is a matter of where one comes from. And I think I must make that clear. Advice is here, not because. This is not a judge's decision when a lawyer gives advice. And I think we all know that. So, on this occasion, I did offer the opportunity to Honourable Coxey to speak as well, as you know, Honourable Harris. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my understanding about this type of trading under insolvent circumstances has actually been covered on three, as you said, with those ones who actually technically are able to pay their debts at the end of the month are able to do that, at least they are covered. But if you remove that, we will actually be perpetuating people who are trading, insolvent to continue doing that without having to say. So I think those small businesses you're talking about, they are also expected to actually at least pay their debt at the end of the month, do everything. But if we remove that, my fear is that we will be allowing anarchy of those insolvent to be taken. I don't think we'll be doing justice to what we're trying to protect.
Right. Honourable
Terry,
would you like to say Honourable Elvis?
Madam Chair, with regards to subsection C, which defines it much better, the question now arises, why two different versions of the same meaning, if you put it that way, in subsections 2 and 3. And it would clarify the whole situation. The subsection 3's wording can be moved to subsection or replicated to subsection 2 as well, and replace the underlying trading under insolvent circumstances.
Understand that. In other words, the three freedom clubs is happy with an inverted commas. Am I right? I don't want to misrepresent you on the help, but you're making a proposal that given that there seem to be two, in your opinion, different, explanations. Is that what you say?
Yes, there's not clarity on the meaning of insolvent circumstances as such, whether it's technical, commercial, and so forth. And I'm saying to clarify that issue, if one replicates the words in subsection 3, in subsection 2, by actually replacing it with the underlying word in subsection 2, it will give more clarity because, as the DTI has indicated, it will then most certainly show and indicate commercial insolvency in terms of the Insolvency Act as a deed of insolvency, and I think that brings clarity to the situation. Does that make sense?
So look, that in a way what you're doing is slightly changing the proposal. Am I right? It's there, but it's perhaps the intent is there, but it is another proposal. Am I right?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a compromise, because I do understand concerns about companies being insolvent and trading as such. So, but we must be clear about when we deem them to be insolvent and what type of insolvency we're talking about.
Thank you, Honourable Albert. Honourable Cossey, I haven't
spoken to you. Okay. We have to specify what do we do about companies trading under insolvent circumstances, because if we only put that alone, what are we doing about the companies that are insolvent? It means that we're leaving it open, and I think somehow, even if we change the wording, we need to deal with the companies that are trading under it.
Right. Honourable Harris, please.
Chair, the intention here is to have two stages of compliance. The first one is a notice, you could call it a preliminary notice, to companies trading under insolvent circumstances. Now, we've been through this countless times in the last few months. The problem with it structured as it is now, the law, is that you will have hundreds, perhaps thousands of companies who, in their trading operations, become technically insolvent at any point in the day. Those companies, as the law is written now, will have to be issued a notice to show cause why they should be permitted to continue carrying. What it means is that repeatedly throughout the day, hundreds if not thousands of companies will be breaching the law as it's currently structured. Now, the proposal which the legal advisor from ECT is supporting is very simple. She says you should simply delete that phrase, or is not trading under insolvent circumstances. And she's not, like Mr. Hadebe was supposing that perhaps it's linked in some way to the fact that the phrase is not defined. She's not qualifying it like that. She's simply saying taking it out would be a neat solution to that problem of hundreds of companies becoming illegal at various points of the day. Perhaps what Advocate Albert is proposing might begin to be a solution, but it still incorporates a kind of two-stage process. And I think if we go with Advocate Albert's suggestion, then perhaps we need to roll up the second stage, the stage that involves the compliance notice, into the first stage. Because what I'm concerned about is the current formulation will, as I said, make hundreds of companies illegal at various points of the day.
Honourable
Hadebe? Thank you, Chairperson. I think that from the explanation of DTI, I understand the role of subsection 3. But what is also critical here is what Honorable Koti has raised, that one, we cannot allow a situation where the companies are going to trade in insolvent circumstances. What are we seeing by that? So I think that there must be an explicit term that we don't condone that. But when we go to that subsection 2, it's very clear that within the 20 working business days, section 3, subsection 2, it says 20 business days, they must satisfy. They are not illegal. What happens? They must be insolvent, but they can prove that no, by month end, we have had the breaching finance from the bank, will be able to pay X, Y, and Z. So they define they're not trading under criminal circumstances. But the issue of insolvent circumstances, really, we must highlight it because we are also trading globally. So that the people, our partners abroad, they must know that the companies are going to work with here, they are really going to be responsible, not reckless.
Right, you're closing this honorable proceeding. Yeah, okay, you're going to be the last speaker.
Not obliged, not kind of you, Madam Chairman. I felt to take the microphone once more because some of the things which have been said I think are confusing. We're not dealing with insolvency law. This is insolvency. This is a company law. Behind there is an entire body of law which deals with insolvency. Deals with insolvency in this country as in any other country of the world. It dealt in the interaction between those with an interest, the creditors, and the company. That's how it works internationally. This is a unique provision in which the company, the state, comes in and say, hey, stop, of its own accord or on demand of somebody else who doesn't feel like going through the insolvency law procedures and all the guarantees which are set there. So, if anything, this doesn't meet with companies, with international standards. It's repugnant to what is international standards. The technical insolvency, the crucial aspect is that the history of corporate development will show you thousands of situations in which companies were in trouble. They could not pay their bills. They kept carrying, and then they succeeded. It is the very, very notion of taking risks. And this has an enormous chilling effect on the possibility of taking risks. In the Insolvency Act, there are a number of provisions which limit the measure to which this risk can be taken under the law. It cannot be taken in front of the creditors if there is insolvency or that which has been done can be taken back. There is a 6-month window, there is an entire body of law that deals with it. Do we have a problem? No, it's not Mariam Bustini or Tim Harris. It's Dyke on behalf of big business. It's the guy who spoke here on behalf of small businesses. It's on behalf of those, our clients. We're creating a product, not for CIPA, not for the CDI, but for those who need to use these products. They have a problem. Listen to your grassroots who are those who are going to use this company for it.
Now, I'm advised here for a minute that basically, as I did say earlier, we actually have two proposals. We have some proposals originally straightforward by the Honorable Ambrosini. We had a broad endorsement of that by the Honorable Elder, who put forward a kind of compromise approach him, was looking at a modification, an amendment of the proposal, and I commit honorable help. Now, if that is so, can you please put it right? All right. And we will come back to this. To propose that other one, you see, formally, before we move on that one. So we're closing this. We're not reopening your proposal, Honorable Ambrosini, per se. What will be on the table, per se, will be the amendment, per se, of that proposal. Unless you don't now want to entertain that amendment.
Mr. May, Madam Chair, I don't think it's procedurally correct. You had one motion which is on the table. Then you've got the second motion, and that's what the Honorable Halbert is doing, which is amending the first motion. So I'm not sure how one entertains the second motion without entertaining the first motion.
It's based on the first motion. We have a proposal. It's seconded. How many are in favour of the first motion as it stands? Proposal as it stands. Three. How many are opposed to that proposal as it stands?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
We move. Now, a clause is adopted then in this manner. I don't think you can have a counter immediately when you've already accepted the first proposal. We've accepted the first proposal. That's what I was advised. We've already accepted it, you know, the proposal. Been opposed, all right? That's why I didn't want to go with the route. But that was your position. So anyway, we've gone with the route now. It's voted out. We now move... No, we're moving on to clause 16. Wasn't. It was until you came with something else. You wanted yours voted on. Honourable Albert has just accepted yours.
He's
accepted your proposal.
I must have been some body language because then
there. He had his hand up, so I suppose that's body language. He accepted your proposal. He voted.
He voted in favour of mine. One has fallen, there was another one behind. There were two proposals on the table, you allowed it on the table.
Yes.
There was no seconder for the second motion, so it's not on the table.
Richard, the reason there was no seconder for the proposal is that you didn't call for one. I suspect if you called, you announced that there was a second motion. I suspect if you called for a seconder, somebody might have seconded. Yeah.
Right. We'll do it again. Oh, now you're happy. Right. The second one is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the second one. You've just voted on it.
Sir, you invited the Honourable Albert to put in writing his proposal.
Yes, but he's just accepted yours.
Well, one is entitled to endorse two proposals.
No, you can't endorse one that you're amending. You say no, and I have an amendment to it. He's got an amendment. That's why I asked him to put it in writing. You didn't want to wait. So perhaps you ought to leave the chair to guide the meeting, and not yourself. All right? Now, I suggest you leave me to guide the meeting. We've been your route. We're now on the second one, all right, which is Honourable Elvis. Okay. It's waiting, and I said that, and you didn't want to wait. Now, can we move? Yes. I will move my way, not yours. Clause 16. I sometimes think I ought to be talking another language, but English is my second. I guess it's your second. We'll just have to manage. Yes.
It's my first, but I still am slightly confused. If you could just clarify for me, the proposal where you asked Honourable Albert to present in writing an amendment, is that still... Are we going to come back to that later?
Yeah, let's go back.
At the beginning, I told you we were splitting.
I'm not sure what you didn't understand. And I said, we have an amendment to that. You understand? We have an amendment. That amendment must be in writing, relating to that. So we're not waiting now. We're moving to the next one, clause 16. Now, I'm not going to go through this, because this has come close to obfuscation. Look it up. Clause 16. Number 1, page 18. In line 37. After inspect, well, no, we said you'll go inspect. Cool and calm. Clause 16.1. Agreed? 2. Agreed? Clause 16, we're on. Still on clause 16. 3. Agreed? Clause 16.4. Agreed? Clause 16 is passed. Clause 18. 1. Agreed? Still on, well, that's 18. Clause 18 passed. Clause 19. 1. Agreed. Clause 19. 2. Agreed. New clause. 1. That the following be a new clause amendment of Section 31 of Act 71. Right, clause 20. Right. Clause 21. Clause 22. Clause, right, that's clause 20. Clause 23. 1. New clause. That the following be a new clause amendment of Section 39 of Act 71, 2008. Clause 29. Honourable Harris?
Chair, I have a proposal. Before we get to clause 29, that we introduce a new clause amending section 45. There's a copy of it in the document that is distributed to everybody. I can read it to you and then most of it.
I think that's
the best
thing everyone
is referring to as to everyone
in this section. I'm referring to the Principal
Act. I'm referring to the clause that amends section 45. That's page 98 of the Principal Act. Page 98. Will you go ahead, please?
So the proposal, as appears on the paper, is that we replace subclause A with the following subclause by the deletion of the words subject to subsections 3 and 4 in subsection 2 and by the deletion of subsections 3 and 4. Now, Chair, in terms of motivating for this, the requirements of Section 45 require a special resolution for any group loan, internal intercompany loan. It's, at this stage, I think, companies make such loans without special resolution. The requirement for them to do it is impractical and actually doesn't relate to the idea of financial assistance in the context of the section. Of course, you would want loans to companies controlled by directors that would introduce round-tripping, if you like. That you would want, you want to regulate against that. I think the proposal that I've put will provide sufficient protection against loans to companies that are controlled by directors, yet still allow intercompany loans to happen without a special resolution, which, as it stands, is over the ability.
proposal on the table, which is also very clear in the proposed amendments which everyone has, and it's proposed by the Honourable Harris of the Democratic Alliance, seconded by
Marion Rossini of the Alphabet Caterpillar Party.
Harris, the Honourable Harris. All right. Then we'll have to start the process of seconding again, but go ahead.
Try and make it more simple. Right now, the way it is structured, this clause, will require a special resolution to make any intercompany loan. I maintain and therefore propose a new amendment to, if you like, allow loans to companies that are controlled by directors to be regulated by this section, but to allow normal intercompany loans to occur without a special resolution. I'm not sure if I can put it any more simply than that.
Sometimes when people are looking for references as well, then you're not listening at the same time. Thank you. Honourable Helen Harris of the Democratic Front Alliance. Seconded by?
It's still Marion Rostini, still from the Capital Freedom Party.
Is seconded by anyone else? I'm coming to this. Yes?
Madam Chair, Freedom Front passes the second first amendment.
Thank you.
We're 30, as different amounts.
Honourable Cutsey, you had your hand up. Did you want to second it? Seconded by the well, no, you must speak into the mic.
Yes, Chair, I will put the
hand up. Cool.
I know
you are the few hand start and all those issues. Right. Are there any objections? Hang on, before I do that, and you do it the way I'm doing everything, and that is on page 2 of the consultant, after it's been proposed and seconded. You've been very happy with your consultant, so I'm not even going to entertain those comments. Clause 31 and section 45. I am not in favour of the deletion of existing subsection 3 and 4 of section 45 of the Companies Act 71-2008. The Act, in my view, they provide desirable safeguards for shareholders and creditors against potential abuse of the power to make loans or give other financial assistance to directors, or to do so to the prejudice of the company shareholders and or creditors. Can I have the one that we need to get any objections, please? You are. Any objections? You know, you had a lot of time last time.
Should we not stick to the motion, stick to the matter before people decide whether or not
we had the proposal doing that. We did have a proposal doing that. And you know you're not going to be cut short. Let's just accept that. You will be given an opportunity. Are there any objections, Honourable Kadebe?
Thank you, Chairperson. Although we disagreed with our advisor in the paper, I think here I would agree with her, because really, when we are going to have the intercompany loan, the issue is that intercompany loan, the shareholders must really know where is the money going to. That's the first point. So I agree that when you think that this is a safeguard for the shareholders, it's very critical. The question I would ask also, even in the first instance, I have understood that if it was within the same holding company, they say that for the big company for the subsection side. For the big company for subsection which are controlled by the single director at the top, I could have understood, but it's going to be regulated in between other companies. Might have a problem. So I agree with with the
advisor. Yeah.
Right. That was, so to speak, in any case, am I correct to understand, Honourable Harris, a new clause, a totally, you know, coming directly to the Principal Act, which is fine, as we were having passed yesterday, is fine. Now we'll take speakers. Anyone may put their hand up. Thank you, Honourable Ambrosini.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let us start from, and so I don't take the order of the state value. Your sense of humor is extraordinary. I wish I had it. But it all starts with a sentence, except to the extent that the memorandum of incorporation of a company provides otherwise. Except to the extent that the memorandum of a company provides otherwise. Now, this memorandum of incorporation of companies are usually prepared by chartered accountants, they're sold even at CNA, and they go on and on and on, and they provide for all the eventuality. Those are the braces. So, and I was hoping
well,
to take
this on
this. Those is where the guarantee. We are the law camp and go beyond that with the people themselves who can provide for themselves. And why does it do it? The oracle tells us. She says to prevent abuses. Fine, but we are stopping the use, to prevent the abuse. And that's where the problem we have. The abuse can be prevented in the memorandum of incorporation. Subsection 3 tells you that no matter what memorandum of incorporation, under certain conditions, you can't even do it. And what if we want to do it? My company, our shareholders, we're all in agreement, we put it in a memorandum of agreement, no, we can't. These are the type of unnecessary brakes and bells which make this corporate vehicle less suitable to the purposes for which people want to use it. That's why it's something that people do. It is not necessarily fraudulent. It's done all the time. If there is fraud, there is plenty of legislation to deal with the fraud. There are plenty of remedies to deal with the fraud. Here you are limiting what this vehicle can do, how it can serve the people for which we are building it, and it's not necessary. It's a paranoid mindset, which I think carries straight from the 1973 Act.
It's just one thing I wanted you to consider, which I certainly have been doing as you've been talking and I've been reading this. But such a company would also have minority shareholders, would they not? And from what I understand about boards and shareholders, you get voted out or it. I mean, like, look here now, you were voted out on your clauses that you want. So, in this, you can have a majority voting for something. Now, I'm just asking. I never thought of this before, in this instance, when we went through it, but now you pose that question implicitly. That then there would be a vote in line with the memorandum, and even if the minorities didn't agree, whereas from what I understand of the international law that has begun to change overseas, and some of it has, there's every effort now to protect minority shareholders. This wouldn't. I'm posing the question.
May I answer?
Yes.
Thank you very much. There are lots of other laws out there which stop the case in which there is embezzlement from directors. There are derivative actions here in the case that the directors utilize this specific tool to divert corporate opportunities away from the company into their pockets. There are laws which will put them in jail if those loans are not given in the interest of the company, but their personal interest is golden based on it. There is fraud law. So the abuse is taken care of. What we are trying to make here extremely difficult, if not impossible, is the use under condition where it happens all the time. Again, this is not that an Ambrosini saying so or a Harris saying so, it comes from Psyche, but the people who deal with it every day, they're not people who are trying to scheme ways. They reflect the practice of business and how business operates, and we need to create a vehicle which serves those needs because it's going to be used by them. So I don't think that the protections are there. This is just throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Situation at the moment, maybe you have spoken, especially in your I'm just looking right, in which we have, I'm just making sure, you have four people who have in fact supported this year in terms of seconding it, am I correct? Yes. You've had an objection from the ANC. Do we have any other speakers from the ANC? I'll take only one more, and then we'll have to put it to a vote. Honourable Pogasa.
Chairperson, thank you. I tend to agree with the view which says that we must keep this law as it is, because if you read the rest of it, subsection A, Roman Tica 1 and Roman Tica 2, and B, and the whole of 4. Whilst it does provide for the possibility of issuing loans, but it does also protect the shareholder. So if we now throw out these two clauses, we are just opening the wide gate for fraudulent activity, and I don't think that we would be acting responsibly. Indeed, we would be acting recklessly and with what we
have. Thank you. As you see, I'm really indulging you with that. That'll be our last speaker. Very briefly on
the extremely briefly, Chair. The point is this, as it's written, this clause throws the net too wide. It includes intercompany loans that happen all of the time, and if this law is put into place, companies have to take special resolutions every 2 years to ensure that they can do those everyday intercompany loans. And what we're asking for is just an amendment that focuses on the problematic lending and leaves out the lending that happens every day under the terms and under the company.
You just said otherwise, more or less quoting you. If this goes through every 2 years, you need to pass a resolution. Doesn't the board meet as an AGM? But anyway, I'm just pointing. Yes, now I'm asking.
The point is, the legislation actually specifies which approved such assistance for the specific recipient. So you're talking about an extremely onerous resolution that has to be taken every 2 years, which regards and incorporates in every single recipient. So if you have a new part of your company that you'd like to, or a new related company you'd like to make a loan to, you have to pass a special resolution to approve that. What I'm suggesting is it's too onerous and it doesn't take into account the everyday practice of the company.
Fine, I think
we've
all heard enough, right? Can I put it to a vote then? I'm going to put, it's a new clause, just a minute while I get it up to read it. It's a new clause that was proposed, section 45, referring to the Principal Act on 98. And a proposal put in front of you. How many are in favour of it? The proposal on the table. Those in favour, please raise your hands. One, two, three, four.
Those not in favour, please raise your hands.
One, two, three, four.
Five, six. Honey, no abstention. Abstention, no. That clause is carried without a
vote. I'm
not registering my vote. No. I'm chairing this meeting.
You're a member of this committee, either you're staying in the vote. You're not a casting vote.
A casting.
You're not a casting vote. A casting vote in case of a tie. Otherwise, you've got a regular vote. They put into exercise one way or the other.
No, the advice I have received, I disagree, and it will have to then be taken up through another means, is that only when there is a, well, they didn't use the word tie at all, but where there was an equal, I could put in a vote. And I'm sorry, that is the advice I was given. Now, the later, if you want to invalidate our decision at the end, then you can take it. But I am truly relying on advice. I try to explain this. So I'm neither voting for or against. Except when I'll be forced to. And then I will exercise all my obligations. Right. I'm going to have, just remind me, that was before clause 29? Yes. Yeah. Clause 29. Yes. 1. Mm-hmm. We're turning over clause 37. 1. Well, I'm not going to keep on prompting you to agree or disagree.
No, we agree.
Clause 40.
Definitely agree.
Clause 41.
Definitely agree.
I must say, I only ever seem to hear one voice. I always say to the children, I know God can hear everything, but can we pray together? Clause 41. Wait, Honourable Harris.
I was told my disagreement, I actually agree with you.
Right. Clause, that's a good one, kick me on my toes just then. Clause 41. One. Okay, for clause 43. One.
Honourable
Harris?
Chair, once again, there's a proposal that everybody has in front of them. It is that we delete, and so this is with regards to section 69 of the Principal Act. Which is on page 136. The proposal, as it appears in front of you, is to delete subsections 9 and 10 on page 136 and add the words to the beginning of clause 8, save under the authority of the High Court with jurisdiction on the company concerned before it says a person is responsible. A quick motivation, Chair. Everybody in the committee has heard me make this several times. What this does, the amendment simply returns the legislation to the current status under the 1973 Act, whereby somebody who commits a crime as specified in the law of this nature is permanently disallowed from becoming a company director unless the High Court with the relevant jurisdiction
means that they may establish company directorship. So it's in line with the spirit of the existing law, and I think rejects the idea that the law should prescribe a minimum period which is subject to judicial extension. Rather, it provides for a permanent disqualification subject to judicial review.
No, one at a time. Where we are is we're referring to the Principal Act. On page 136, all right, and we are referring to 69 there, but it's on page 136, the Principal Act, and we are looking at about line 12. A person is disqualified. If you come, of course, to the the actual page 8, clause 47, you know what I'm reading from, clause 47, do you see the reference? Sorry, at the top of the page. At the top of the page, don't let me mislead you, it's clause 43 on page 8. But it starts on page 7. Yes.
I'm not sure how you'd like to sequence these, but my objection is not to the existing clause 43 as it appears on page 7. Exactly. I'm not sure if you're going to come there, but I support fully the proposal in clause 43, but I'm proposing that we extend in line with what I said.
Members, let's just apply our minds here carefully. Look at the Principal Act and the reason why I'm referring you there. Because this amendment only alludes to that what is in the Principal Act. It is not an amendment that has been put forward before, either by ourselves or anyone else. So in a sense, it's new, am I right? The whole thing. So it is on that clause, but it's not specific to the amendment we've already agreed to as part. But we have been down this road before, as the Honourable Harris has quite rightly said. So it's not a new issue. It's what we said put in writing. And to capture it really, it is simply saying, in layman's terms, what I would call is to say, here, you know, you're asking for this to fall aside, and only if somebody goes to court can it be, you know, will it be extended, the disqualification. What he is proposing is that no permanent disqualification. However, if you want it changed, you go to the courts. I hope I've explained this very simply. So in here has been, you're disqualified for X period or whatever, and then you're automatically not, unless someone goes to the court and says, this guy should still be. The proposal on the table is, no, permanent disqualification. However, if you want to change the permanence, go to the court. In other words, it's a change around. For example, the French, you are guilty before they even decide you are innocent. Under British law, you are innocent until proven guilty. One of the things I learned about the French law. So I'm sure it's not quite like that, but anyway. Having guillotine is likely to fall while you're innocent. Not really. This is not a laughing matter. It's a very serious matter. Honourable Harris has put in a good proposal. I don't think anyone now misunderstands. Does anyone want to support the proposal, Honourable Ambrosini?
I am Ambrosini, seconding it on behalf of the Catholic
Church. Seconded by Elton Fergus. Yes, third is by Peter Plus. Thank you.
Elton, yes. Thank you. You have spoken. Somebody else may speak again later. Are there any objections?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that I understand the spirit with which our colleagues are coming with, but I think that if you can look at our constitution, we not only have even what is known as the prisons, we have correctional facilities, whereby we, when the people have erred, we give them the chance to redeem their dignity back and then able to be part of the society as a whole. So if someone has got the potential to do something, really, we know a lot of people who were once criminals, but at the end of the day, they became big guys in the business, even in the political sector.
Even at the churches.
Actually, the best pastors found out they were worst criminals, sweet and back. So, what is critical here, Chair? I think that as South Africa, where the spirit of our constitution is that to give the people a chance. Because if we didn't do that, even after 1994, we could have had a mafia in South Africa. So I think that this thing must be retained as it is.
Thank you. You had a motivation there for the objection, Honourable Cutsey.
Yeah, I think maybe the debate is advocate versus the lay people. but the issue here is, I thought that this is one thing that perhaps Honourable Harris should really support. You know, when we came to insolvent, we were able to cushion it by saying cover those up. And I think here, a punishment is being done on the people who, you know, who have done something wrong. But then, as government, we should not punish those people permanently. I think they will be punished for a certain number of years, and thereafter, you know, we are saying they should be back and be punished permanently. And I think we should not make it too difficult for them by applying for them. But after 5 years, if they again go through that, I mean, they will get a punishment.
I'm now, before you speak, because you actually put it on the table, Honourable Ambrosini, your turn.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I heard what the Honourable Rodriguez said, and that I would like for once not to feel like love of politics. And I appreciate the political work that the Honourable Harris is putting forward, maybe a palatable to the Honourable Rodriguez. And I would wish it to be such, but I would wish you to change this objection, because it's important to the Honourable Harris. This has been a point that he's been pounding on throughout the thing, and it's part of the give and take of having a consensus document to run and dance with a little itsy bitsy that is unpalatable to one, but it reflects the needs of a different constituency and concedes. In order to concede that you need to do something that you don't agree to. So I would urge the Honourable Rodriguez to reconsider in light of this. And I'm just suggesting to him. The opportunity for the courts
involved on at that point. But really, I don't think we should entertain discussions about helping someone out because they really feel very strongly about this. It's about principle, Chair.
I think the principle of give and take should also not be, we can easily make mistakes if we go only purely on that. Because it's more a matter of if 2 plus 2 is 4, it remains like that. But we can't say, because you have been arguing, then 2 plus 2 is 19, and then we then say, it's all right for the sake of supporting the person. It can't be like that. So I think we should support the amendment.
Thank you, Honourable
Mabasa.
Honourable
Khadebe.
Honourable
Khadzi. Honourable Chair, as I said, that I invoke the spirit of the Constitution, that we have to forgive. Because if we don't forgive, you know, if we go for an eye for an eye, we'll end up creating a nation which is blind. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. But it's also the Book of Wisdom, which I respect so much, is sometimes known as the Holy Bible. You shall not be judged. You must not judge the other people, also I will only equally be judged. So I remember one person in instance who was Saul, who killed a lot of Christians. But the very same Saul was the one who became Paul, who took Christianity to the Gentiles. That's why it's all over the world now. So we cannot be so punitive. I respect this.
May I just add, the Jewish people also have something.
Still on the subject of compromise, let me remind the House that at some stage this clause was removed totally. And we actually brought it to the 5 years. And I thought that the department together, if we talk compromise, then I think that should be where we are. Because at some stage, we not removed, and we asked them to bring it in.
Thank you. Now, that did occur at one stage, but as you say, we're now at an adoption stage, and later we left it open. Now, it's just most unfortunate that you were unwittingly put in another fight. Yes, I know, Honourable Harris, your position is always on principle. So would you like to close your proposal?
I'll close by reiterating that, because I'm not asking for any sympathy. But thank you for the offer, Honourable Member. I think it is an issue of principle. Let me start by pointing the committee's attention to the Cathy Idis and the UCT advisor, who has no objections to my proposal. And I think, Chair, the reason why she doesn't is because Adebe spoke a lot about judging people. I am suggesting, my position is actually much more liberal. Instead of imposing a minimum 5-year restriction, I'm suggesting that if you have a good case and a high court agrees, you can be a director from the day after you're convicted. It's a much more liberal position. There's no minimum restriction of 5 years. I'm suggesting it's totally at the discretion of the court. So, Chair, I think what I'm proposing strikes a balance between fairness and protecting the public. I think I'm endorsed by the UCT advisor, and I think as I bring this up every single time, I challenge any other member of the committee to tell me about one example of a convicted fraudster under the current Act who they believe should have been allowed to serve as a director after 5 years. Nobody's yet to bring that up. I know you don't have a chance now, but perhaps in your own time you could come and tell me about that. Because I think my view, my amendment very neatly allows the court's discretion to decide if you may serve, but perhaps protects the public from people who may try and afford them even after 5 years of their sentence. Thank you.
I think that was a well-defended proposal on principle without anything else. And so we do have it here, typewriting, consultant, has
their objection to the proposed amendment. And I think I've given everyone an opportunity. Am I right? Honourable Coetzee, you got, did you speak?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Honourable Elder.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chair. Betty has also spoken to me personally, and I share his views about Christianity and forgiveness. I'm also a Christian, and I know one should not be kept out of business forever. But I do, however, have certain concerns, because there's also in this world what we call evil, and we also have a responsibility to curtail evil. And you know, I'm looking at in Pretoria, especially, there's been a couple of guys who've been running businesses, open and closing businesses, and those people are taking money from old elderly people, and you know, telling them a lot of promises, and they are losing their money because of these schemes. And these guys keep on cropping up as directors in different companies, and they are not effectively stopped. And we also need to look at the broader principle of protecting the community in which directors function, because we're all connected somehow. And I think that stating that everybody can, after 5 years, become a director again is giving a checkbook, almost a blank checkbook, to these guys who keep on defrauding people. And I think there should be some position or some process by which these people can be taken out of the system completely. And that's why I think deferring to the court and asking the court to declare this person incompetent for a longer period, or even forever, because some people are declared incompetent forever for various reasons. And I think the courts are in the ideal position to actually do that in the end of the day. So it's about striking a balance, because I do I appreciate your point of view as well, but I think we need to look at who we're also protecting, not only the people who want to go back into business, because that's important, and that's why America is successful, because they don't punish people all the time. Right, and that's good. But we need to also keep the people at bad out of the system. And the question is, how do we do that? Thank you.
I think that is actually the question, how do we do that? You know, effectively, in a balanced manner, probably. You raise a slightly different angle. I'm not going to keep on allowing speakers to go on and on. You know what I'm persuaded to do? Honourable Coetzee, just go to the outside possibly to get some water, and we're coming very close to closure on this issue. Honourable Khadebi, very much like I did with Honourable Harris just now, very shortly.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the very same provisions provide that the issue of bailing by the court can also be extended. Even the commission itself can apply for the extension if it is necessary. So I think that there are good check and balance to the system. Thank you.
Enough has been said. I have to rule that. And I think in the end, some very valid and solid points have been made by both sides, actually. And that's a fact. So now, having heard both sides, you are making the decision here. It has been proposed, it's been seconded, it's been objected to. Can we please have a vote? Those in favour of, sorry, you must know what you're in favour of. I've consulted so much documentation after all of the churches and everything. Those in favour then of clause, this is a clause 46 relating directly to the Principal Act 69. Please raise your hands. Right. Three. Those opposed, please raise your hands. One. Five, six, am I correct? One, two, three, four, five, sorry, six, seven. Thank you.
Chairperson, I just want to draw
issued through these three legal matters, as indicated yesterday, that we are busy cleaning up the documents. But under clause 43, on page 8 of the A-list, there's just an issue which I just wanted to draw the committee's attention to. Exit the documents, the A-list, refers to section 11B. Makes reference to a register of the court. Must notify each company which has director to whom the order of conviction relates, of the order of conviction. Chairperson, it's my submission and consulted with the department that the commission would be the appropriate institution to notify each company who has director to whom the conviction in the special order relates. So I just wanted to draw the committee's attention to that. Thank you.
We made yesterday. So, although it's not here, because we never got this done, you know, and those who were here yesterday would have put it in physically, but you may not have done that, Honourable Amrassini. You weren't here yesterday, right? So you should just note that. If you remember right at the beginning, I said this document hasn't been redone. We had requested four changes. One was as little as a comma to be a full stop. This was another one. And there was a typo. Fairy National or fairy valued rather than fairly valued and that kind of thing. So
fairy.
I couldn't agree more. But now thank heavens we're in the land of reality. Can we just move now on the board to clause 47, the serving, sorry, she's just keeping me, she's just sidetracked. We made them in, we have to actually make it, move it, just a minute, Honourable Amrassini. Clause 43, because what you did was in addition, all right, clause 43, agreed. But you need to also say, for the record, including the amendment yesterday. The amendment we just heard yesterday. Please.
The DA agrees with the amendment yesterday.
I feel it's dangerous to ask you because you weren't here yesterday. It would be unfair.
Madam Chair, I've got an accurate and I need to understand that.
I
don't want to lead anyone. Honourable Elvis,
you were of course here, but you did leave. I'm not sure if you were still here.
Madam Chair, I don't think I was present when this was dealt with. I can't recall this.
You agree? The change we made as a committee.
Can we just
have it again?
Yes, please.
Yes. Lister Hercules.
Thank you, Chair. The issue relates to the insertion rule 11, A, proposed one, and it specifically relates to 11B. Currently, it reads the registrar of the court must notify each company which has a director to whom the order, and the order refers to a sequestration order or order of removal of a person from office of trust on grounds of misconduct or involvement dishonesty. And the register of the court must notify each company which has a director to the order or conviction relates basically. Now, the reference is to the register of the court, and after discussions with the department, indicated that the commission be the appropriate person, and I think this is more or less aligned with the previous act as well. I think that was the argument behind us for introducing this particular amendment.
Do we agree to this on the basis that we don't want people not knowing what's going on? You know, we've had that kind of situation arising. I don't want to mention organisations here with NDTI, but we all know what may have happened from time to time. So we wanted to ensure that as soon as the commission knew about it, went through, rather than people being left in the dark.
That
was just a check and balance, which we moved.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It's fine to me. Thank you.
Right. So are we agreed then with clause 43?
Mm-hmm.
clause 47, national national legislation issue. Honourable Andrew Seeding.
Two items. First, it can be double checked on the expression absolute liability, of the strict liability, but it's technical. Secondly, I would like to move the amendment that which has been submitted to you, in terms of which the entire clause the paragraph 4 is deleted, and clause B of the bill is also deleted, near the Oracle, the advisor says that she's got no objection to us doing so. I hope that perhaps the Honorable Radebe may have an equal open heart attitude to consider the argument before he objects. And what is being tried to achieve here, and again, it's not necessarily a matter of give and take to make somebody happy, but at the end one decides whether it's in favor or against this entire operation. And one of the concerns expressed since the beginning, in 3 years ago, on the adoption of this act, is that the most important element for companies to do business is predictability. What everyone demands is to know what the law is. Yeah, no. I'm just in the interest of behalf, but this is the last time I speak as well. Yes. My last intervention. The company wants to know what the law is, and we are here to provide that certainty. What the rules are, what is legal and what is illegal. That's what we do, and if we want to create a business which is an environment which is conducive to business, is internationally competitive, foster economic growth, we need to enable people to operate with certainty between what is legal and what is illegal. With the paragraph 4 of this section, we are throwing an entire new category of ethical and unethical. With a blank check to the minister to define from time to time what is ethical and what is unethical, which in the reading of companies and business that reads its relationship with government through the spectacles of fear, I accept it. But in the reading of companies through the spectacles of fears is read as a blank check to any type of social responsibility obligations, things to do over and above the running of the business. Our proposal is that if we want companies to do anything, we pass laws for it. If at any given point of time the Department of Social Welfare, the Department of XYZ wants to impose any type of obligation on any company, we pass a law and we tell them thou shall do. It is not for us to create this very uncertain environment, and again, this is not my proposal alone, and it's not the proposal of anyone of you who will second it, if there is anyone, but it's a proposal that comes from those who are going to use and operate in the environment. It is an additional unpredictable cost to business which will not foster the government commitment to economic growth. So we move that it be deleted. It is not. If there is any need down the road, it can always be reintroduced. But it is something that scares people, and we have no basis to reassure them that it will not be abused because it's a blank check.
Well, Ambrosini, I just wanted to check. You have the opportunity of conceptualizing all the some of us that, you know, that you are referring to the Social and Ethics
Committee. I made a point a couple of times ago.
All right, thank you. Are there any, that's the proposal. All right. It can be found on page 27 of that amendment bill C and in the principal act on page 142. All right. Under
72 and that right. And it's towards the bottom, just before board meeting. Okay, line 27, 28. Now that is what's being proposed. Are there any seconders and those who may wish to third it for this proposal? Honourable Harris from the Democratic Alliance. Honourable Albert from the Freedom Front. Are there any objections? Right. Honourable Habibi, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Kovasa.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think that that section has got a setback because it says the minister may by regulation prescribe a company depending on its annual turnover or the size of the workforce of the nation and extent of its activities. Chairperson, but remember that is referring to social and ethics. It's very critical. You go up to our neighbors up north, West Africa, Ogoni people in Nigeria, they lost their leader, Ken Saro Wiwa, because he objected about the environmental degradation by the oil companies. He was eventually killed for that. So I think that the companies which are big, they have a social responsibility to ensure that the exploration, protecting the environment, protecting the people themselves. So I think through regulations will be very explicit. Even here next to us, in Democratic Republic of Congo, we know that those minerals which are there, they end up being used against the people, the very same people are supposed to be benefiting. So I think that for any future, anyone who's not doing any under the table deals will not have a problem with that. So, Chairperson, I think that those regulations, which is also critical, is that the minister came in and undertook that these regulations will be public. It will be predictable. If you make so many billions of rands, so many millions of rands, you must have that committee. So that really we can be able to focus on social and ethical issues, not like the end of this world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Adebi. You weren't in the room, I think, Honourable Cotsi, when I took hands. I don't know if you wanted to speak. I don't know. Right, Honourable Mabasa.
Thanks, Chair. I think the discretion that will be used by the minister, taking into account the instruments provided to him or to her, should be retained in favor of the minister to utilize them when the need arises. So I would motivate that we retain the phrase.
Thank you, Honourable
Mabasa,
Honourable
Corbett.
Are there any other speakers? I'll come back to those who supported the proposal, Honourable Ambassini. Did you wish to say something, Honourable
Elvis? Madam Chair, just perhaps from a practical point of view, I could say that having worked in the corporate world, even an ethics committee will not make a company more ethical within the company itself. If they make a decision to do something, they will even work out the members of the ethics committee or fire them. You know, that's just the way these guys operate. And so from a practical point of view, I have to just question whether it will work. My view is that if you apply force from the outside, in other words, there's an authority who applies the law. So let's say a company performs ethical work and degrades the environment. There's the National Environmental Management Act, which gives you remedies to protect the environment. And when it comes to other forms of misbehavior, there's also criminal law, common law, statutory law provisions. And while it's a good idea. I think I just have to question whether it actually works, because companies are there to make money and they will push the envelope as much as they can. And we see that as well in the daily life in South Africa. Thank you.
If we are talking about something else, somebody needs to tell me what it is. We don't know what we are legislating.
we are creating a blank check of possibly untold burdens. It scared the living hell out of me, it scared the living hell of others. Everyone else has been very controversial if we are seriously taking it out. Otherwise, we do continue in this very hairy world of great statements and then we just do the opposite.
I'm listening to the argument myself. I looked at this, the first thing I could think of, Honourable Ambrosini, was we've just established one in Parliament. And it made me wonder why it was ever supported by the opposition. No, just a minute. I don't know too much about all the parliamentary structures. I'd be the very first. So, look, this is a very serious issue which has come up, social and ethics. And when I looked at the Constitution myself to have a look and see what is it that we would be sometimes calling for, that to some degree would be very difficult for companies to implement broadly. Remember that the Constitution in so many ways needs enabling legislation, as we all know. When I looked at that particular one, it seemed related very, very much to a number of the issues around bills of rights and this kind of thing, which you could argue were not present in the United Nations until recently, certain aspects there, what they call secondary. A number of those things. I've never been a member of a company in which one got a fee. I've served on boards on behalf of the legislature. So I've only ever served where there have been a social and ethics committee. But having said that, perhaps I was fortunate in that I was serving where they were. So I think that from what you're saying, essentially, you're calling in the proposal here in this clause 47 or 72 in clause A, because I then went into the, to substitute in clause A of clause A with the following clause, by the deletion of subsection 4. When you come to the deletion of subsection 4, and I'm reading from the amendment bill, all right? I'm looking at that particular one. And it in fact links up with what you indicated earlier, even you or the Honourable Harris, on page 28. You follow me. I'm looking at the amendment bill. Okay. So, we've put a case forward, the practical implications have been very clearly spelled out by those who, with experience, and others have spoken to a call and a need to really try and activate and concretize the spirit of the Constitution in which, you know, that comes about. I do know one thing, when I travel abroad, most people have never heard of cooperative governance. When we went in 1995, I'm sure the same thing happened to you. But now when I go, it went in 2009, a lot more people understood what it was and wanted to apply it. So I think one needs to factor all these things in before one takes a vote. You're accepting that there have been some valid arguments that we have to put it to a vote. If we have, from what I can see, one proposal and two seconders here at least, can we see by a show of hands those in favour of, just let me get it, in favour of the clause 4772, the proposed amendment that we have before us. You please raise your hands. Three,
says not in favour. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 abstentions. 1. Right, we now move to just wait a minute. Clause 47, as it is in the amendment bill, which refers to the one which was changed from national legislation. That was thanks to one of the three of you. Thank you very much. Right. Agreed? Disagreed?
Agreed. Sorry, I request the clarification of whether the expression absolute liability is the correct manner as opposed to strict liability.
In fact, it was to take account of the points that were made to support this, that absolute liability was put in. Some of the points raised, I think, even when you were present.
Agreed, it's just terminological, whether the correct word is absolute or strict, if we can make sure that we're using the correct legal word.
We'll ask our state advisor, Mr. Hercules.
On that point, yeah, you know, it's actually the same meaning, but we have used strict liability in other legislation. I think it's the Consumer Protection Act as well, or maybe for alignment with that particular act. I think my view is that we can substitute it with, but it's the same meaning as such.
Well, I don't think that's a major problem. It's actually bringing everything into line. Thank you. But I hope we remember now what we've done now with that one, okay? No disagreement on it. It's probably just a little technical bringing into line. Thank you. Are we then all agreed with the amendment in Clause 47?
Mm-hmm.
Clause 48, 1. Clause 50, 1. Clause 54, 1. New clause, amendment of Section 99, Act 71, 61. Right. Agreed? Disagreed? Clause 65, 1. Clause 70, it's still theory here, but of course it's theory. Clause 7. You do see what happened here, huh? Right. Clause 73, 1. Clause 75, 1. Clause 80, 1. Clause 83, 1. It's getting thinner and thinner. I can't even hear now. Clause 83, 2. Clause 83, 3. Clause 83, 4. I'm just looking at this, you see. Clause 84, 1. Colleagues, members, this is your bill. Well, you don't want it, you say so by your silence. Clause 84, 1. New clause, 1. New clause, 1, amendment of section 141 of Act 71. Clause 86, 1. Clause 87. Clause 92, 1. New clause, 1, amendment of section 169 of 71. Clause 105, 1.
Clause 109(1). Clause 112(1). Thanks to you, Honourable Ambrosini. Clause 113. Well, you actually changed that. Your name is here. I don't know why I couldn't see it. Must have been a rare occasion where we were all agreeing. Clause 113, we rejected that clause. Do you know what you rejected? Right. Clause, new clause, amendment of section 218 of Act 71. And then further on, amendment of section 225 of Act 71, 2008, 121. Honourable Harris?
I disagree, and the copy of what I'm proposing is in front of everybody. Okay, the proposal is that the words that are proposed to be deleted are not deleted. Those read, which may not be earlier than 1 year following the date on which the President has sent this Act. The second part of the proposal is that 1 year is replaced with the word 30 months. To motivate for it very quickly, I went through it in detail yesterday, but to recap, given that we're going to be finishing, ideally, this Act in the next week or two, to expect South African businesses to come to terms with and understand all of the amendments that we right now are still debating and deciding on, it's unreasonable to expect them to have to comply with this Act in full by the 1st of April. The proposal would, given that it's 30 months, and given that I understand the President signed the Companies Act 2008 on the 14th of April 2009, the 30 months extended from then would leave this Act to be implemented on the 14th of October 2011. Therefore, giving plus minus 6 months of time for the business sector to come to terms with these amendments we're proposing now and make sure that they will be able to comply with the law. So in essence, I think it's unreasonable for them to have to comply with this in the next 3 weeks, and we should give more time. My proposal is that 6 months, give or take a few days, would be sufficient time. I'm happy to consider another period of time, but as long as there is additional time given, I think it's reasonable to make a change.
Thank you very much, Harris. That's the proposal. We did hear that yesterday, but we have it more formally, you know, and in writing for us today. Do we have supporters for the proposal? Honourable Ambrosini? Thank you. Honourable Elder?
I'm also seconded. I feel comfortable. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any objections to it? I just want to get all the objections first. Thank you. Anyone else objecting? No. Right, go ahead.
We are objecting to the proposed amendment on the basis that this bill has been receiving attention for too long a period. And people have made inputs into the bill. So the sooner we decisively make it an instrument that is available to be utilized by companies, the better. Otherwise, they will soon accuse us of being taking is too easy, and they will soon not have confidence in us. So I think we must be decisive, and we must be happy that we have given so much time into it.
That's
position of the objectors, Honourable Harris?
Yeah, well, I fully agree. We've spent a very long time, in fact, the committee before us has spent a very long time on this legislation. But my concern is not for the things that have been established, well established over the last few years. My concern is for the issues that we're debating today. These are things which companies will have to comply with, Mr. Chair. And we're asking them to comply potentially in 3 weeks' time. I just don't think it's reasonable. I think it's the responsible thing to do to give a little bit of time. I'm not stuck on the proposal of 30 months, which equates to a 6-month suspension. I'm happy to negotiate that time down. I just think it's unreasonable to expect them to comply with the laws we're making right now in 3 weeks' time. So I think perhaps we can rather talk about how much time business needs rather than suggesting that it needs absolutely no time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Harris, Honourable M. Rossini, and then Honourable Cotsey.
Yield to the Honourable Cotsey first, then I will speak after.
Chair,
okay.
I I'm not sure when I gave the chair to you.
I ask your permission to yield to the Honourable Cotsey. You don't allow me to. It's a standard parliamentary practice to yield to a colleague. You don't recognize it. He does speak. You know, the Honourable colleague says we need to be affirmative. We need to be strong. We're passive. I mean, who cares about the people which is represented? You know, tough luck, radio or not, we're coming. And I think that that's not really the attitude that, that a legislature should adopt. Then I've got another problem, and I was asking for a couple of statements to verify. Are we giving enough time to the president to do what the Constitution requires him to? Which is based on applying his mind, exercising a preliminary assessment of constitutionality, and that would be a same procedure. Or are we giving the president a strict deadline to assent? I think that what is suggested is the fair approach towards the president and the presidency, is the correct approach towards the citizens. I mean, I don't see why we need to push people into illegality. I mean, the most important thing, not in any aspect, is that we're eliciting voluntary compliance. If we bring an act that, since the outset, requires a lack of placing people in non-compliance, and companies will need to change the way they do things. And it doesn't matter that the law has been in consideration for a long time. Anyone who knows about business will know that people are just to law. Until the law is the law, nobody registers. If you expect people to begin adjusting processes, the structures, the way they operate on the basis of bills, ideas, policy papers, they go crazy. There is so much happening out there that they take us seriously only once the Gazette brings an act into force. Look at the Consumer Protection Act. It's not into force yet. We have these examples of laws not coming into force. It's from the time when there is absolute certainty that the law is coming into force that citizens can be reasonably expected to begin the process of bringing themselves in compliance. This act is like having a sign that says stop on a 100 mile an hour highway with no possibility of slowing down and reaching the stop point.
Very much, Honourable Ambrosini. Honourable Cotsey.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I know that this is the time for the formal discussion on this. I know that previously the department has said they themselves are ready. They have said it repeatedly, everything they are ready. But I would really want to check, because I'm just thinking, If we come to some kind of a compromise, because if we talk about 3 weeks and about issues that we've been discussing for the last few days, perhaps we did would it be very presumptive as problem if maybe we do not say even 30 months, we actually give them time far less than 30, you know, as a form of compromise? Would that disadvantage the department in terms of this implementation that much, just to consider giving businesses even less than 6 months so that they can order? Because we ourselves, as we have been grappling with just understanding even the amendments we are doing in the last few days. I wouldn't say 30 months, perhaps something far less than that. And if the department feel that it would really disadvantage them, I would propose not the 30 months, but a time far less than that, but perhaps not 2 weeks that they will be expected according to what you're proposing.
Thank you, Honourable Kapsi. Yes, Honourable Jayasula.
I think it is not proper to sit here and undermine the integrity of our president. We do our part of the job, and we let this thing pass through parliament and go to the office of the president. If the president has a problem in assenting, he knows what his authority is, and you know he has all his power to say, I have difficulty with this legislation, I'm sending it back to you to correct 1, 2, 3, 4. Have those powers. We cannot be sitting here and trying to say we are prescribing to the president that he will do this in 3 weeks or in 1 week or in 30 months. Let's leave the power of the president to the president, and we must respect that. That is the first part. The second part is that we are talking here on behalf of the employer, as if we are introducing a new legislation which comes with things that never happened in South Africa before. Throughout the processes that we've been doing this legislation, most of the things that are in here are not new. And most of the things that employers are expecting, it doesn't suggest that when we are here and agreed on certain clauses, we have agreed to say we are going to treat recklessness as a problem. Therefore, we mean that from day one, we are going to be putting police out there to arrest employers because they are reckless. Let's prove that. The process of implementation of the law, we all know, this is not the first law that we begin to do. We propose, President, that we don't change anything now. We let this legislation go through, we put it to Parliament, it goes to the President will assent it if he is satisfied that it should be assented to. Anything that we are doing now is talking on the basis of assumption. We assume that the employers will have problems. We assume that the President will have problems. And it doesn't help us much. We have done the work. Let's finalize it. Let's present it before the plenary of Parliament. And then we take it from there.
Thank you, Honourable
Salam.
Somebody else
could
say hands up, but I'm not sure.
Chairperson, I just wanted to add that there is nothing in this time space that we are giving of the 1st of April which would render these challenges in court, and therefore I agree that we must leave the process as is and let the process begin on the 1st of April.
Right. Sorry, let me take Honourable Elbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is a practical question once again, we're making changes today. And the question I'd like to actually pose it to the DTI, whether they have any plan to inform the public as to the final changes in the Act before the 1st of April and what that plan might be. Because that communication is important in terms of, you know, speaking to this problem that we're dealing with in time. I support the idea that we should give a little bit more time, but I want to ask that question as well to give us clarity about our situation. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to close the tale of Honourable Harris on the
day. I'm simply requesting the right that you've been granting to have the last word at the proposal. Chair, the very fact that we're sitting here for hours late into the night, we sat for hours yesterday, shows that the bill isn't completed. I acknowledge the things that business has known about for a long time. I'm happy with those. We can implement those immediately, business must comply immediately. But the issues that are up in the air right now, even as we speak, until we debate it, until the NCRP signs it off, are issues that are uncertain. We cannot expect business on the 1st of April to suddenly understand these issues that are still up in the air, that are still uncertain. I must just register my extreme disappointment that my position is quite magnanimous. I think 6 months sounds reasonable. But I was happy to talk about shorter periods of time. But most of the members in the committee, a few notable exceptions, just reject the idea of giving any additional time at all. I'm not sure what else I can say except that I'm extremely disappointed, and it's not a very generous debate that's happened in the last few minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it was a reasonable question there from yourself, Honourable Albert. I'd like the DDG, if possible, to respond, otherwise to direct it to the Director General. I'm simply said DD simply because I'm dealing with the speech.
Yes, thanks, Honourable Chair. I think I'm also thrown from this kind of discussion where Honourable Harris raised this issue, which I think is a matter which I think one should be concerned about, because I mean, if we regulate, we must ensure that we don't adversely affect the lifeblood and doesn't have any impact on the private sector. So what we did after that discussion yesterday, we did another meeting of the team, and we went through each and every aspect that would be affected by these amendments to see what the impact would be and if there would be a lack of preparedness, or extra cost, or extra regulatory compliance burden, and so on. So, Madam Chair, we've gone through it, and what I can say, there are a few areas which have had an impact, for example, but all of them have been accommodated. If I can mention them just to reassure the committee. The one issue raised was the par value of shares. Now again, that has no effect on companies, it just gives greater clarity on the matter. There was a question of the recognition of symbols, which I think the committee did agree then to allow 3 years for the companies to implement that. That is one of the major areas where companies said they would incur major costs. It was then accommodated, so they have 3 years to implement that in the event that is sufficient. Then there was the issue of company audits at the financial year end. Again, there has been a transitional provision made for companies to accommodate those whose year ends are distant. Then, Madam Chair, I can assure that in every case there is always a transition period for companies, for institutions to adapt. In this particular act, we are dealing with two things. There's the principal act, and then there's the amendments which we are currently dealing with. Many of the amendments, I agree, Honourable Harris, it is very substantial radical revisions which have been made, but those things does not directly relate to the commercial operations. If you take the rescue provisions, if you take provisions relating to the company's commission or to fraudulent directors, those issues are not the ones which has a day-to-day effect. So I think we've looked at it, but also, as you know, the
we completed the, we issued the regulations last year, June. They've been discussed workshop with Burton, and then at the request of Bruce, in the third quarter of last year, we gave another 6 months extension, which the minister granted to make it the 1st of April. That was supposed to come into effect the 1st of November, and it was extended. So extensions have been granted. I think also from our side, the commission has to be up and ready for operations as from the 1st of April, the new companies commission. In that regard, the team has been working flat out. We've got the new commission now registered as a public entity with the Treasury. The processes have been completed for the appointment of the companies commissioner and the deputy commissioner. The IT systems, the operational procedures, the transfer of staff to the new commissions, all those labor relations obligations, operational systems have been put into place. So I can assure you that we've done it due diligence and we are fully operational to take effect. So I can assure the committee that there will be no negative impact on a private sector operation when this comes into operation. I think there is a further danger that if we continuously, and I think it isn't, it won't be the end of the world even if one grants a 3 or 6 month extension. But it's just that this act has been so long under discussion that if people are all expecting that we are all working towards the 1st of April, it would bring a lack of certainty if things are continuously postponed, especially if there's no concrete adverse effect. So I think that, as I said, we have really looked the matter after the science yesterday, and I think from the detail we can show you that we've applied our minds to the matter, and we will last to want to impact on our lifeblood.
I didn't know that, which we have. I'll only make two comments here. The one is, when this has come up yesterday, I went and did a background check on the processes of 2008, the Act as it now currently stands. And I mean, it is not often, as we all know, that an Act is passed in Parliament and withheld from its implementation. So I don't think either the President or, for that matter, a ministry is not cognizant of this sort of thing. The door is always open. The very reason why this Act was amended is because the door was open. I think we can't ignore that. So I don't. You know, certainly measures are in place. When it comes to the assent, there are things that I never understood until I asked yesterday to clarify. It's not such a simple matter. Once this comes out of Parliament, adopted, I am coming back to, once it comes out and is adopted, it goes across to the President's office. There is no way someone dictates to the President, I can assure you, in any way about when something is signed. Suggestions, requests can be made, no. And even after an assent, apparently, I say this on the advice I got, a date can be proclaimed for something later by the President. So there are many, many checks and balances that I personally was not aware until I went back to consult. So I think the presidential issue should be reasonably clear. And I think part of that is because we have a constitutional democracy. Unlike many countries, we do have a constitutional court, which turned down legislation that had been assented to even under President, former President Mandela. So government
say they don't do that. And over the years, a practice has been adopted in Parliament so that when I became chair, I heard from the Speaker, and some of you from your parties may have been in that meeting of the Budget Forum that he chairs. That is not just that the Cabinet has cut down a lot of these constitutional everything going there. He doesn't want legislation going to the Parliament, to the Constitutional Court, on the ground that Parliament is at fault. Because committees did not apply their minds, they ignored other parties' proposals that were not looked at properly. And these are the issues he raised. And I do think one thing has happened here. Every one of us, individually in some cases, have spent hours. Collectively, we've spent hours. Some more than that. And the only thing I can say is, on the amendments that were put before us, some of them were made a long time ago, including one on Harris that we came back to again today. You know, it was made a long, long time ago. We've had the opportunity of looking at it. We're not finished with that, I realise, because we got this in writing and we're coming back to it. But the point I am making, whatever the decision is from this committee, there are many, many checks and balances you have. And the little I have heard, the little, heard coming to me on an individual basis from some stakeholders, many I don't know, is that they appreciate the submissions they have made being taken into account, because perhaps I inadvertently led them to believe that we wouldn't be allowed to tackle the principal act, because that was the impression I was under. But many of those submissions in tackling the principal act, the DPI also addressed. Even without being requested, they address them from the submission, you know, the hearing stage. We've done a similar thing, as you know yourself. We haven't achieved, even as different parties, something. I hear reliably from the ANC, they haven't achieved everything that they've requested, because they've been persuaded otherwise, believe it or not. You, I know, haven't achieved everything. Neither of you, Honourable Ambrosini. But contrary to what you may think, many of the points you have made have been taken into account. When we first, whenever you say something, or anyone, I put your name next to it. You may not realise that. So I know where it's coming from. And I'll follow it through. The same with Honourable Albert. I like your practical suggestions. They may not always be carried, but at least one thing is sure, you come from, you know, somewhere else and you're adding something. So, as I should not quite carry on speaking, because you all have your points of view. It is on the table. And now, you do need to just indicate your position, and that is, we at this stage we seem to have three people on the proposal. I think we may have more when we take the vote or whatever, but those in favour, and Honourable Harris, I'll just say one thing. Yes, I think you did put your proposal very generously, indicating another view, you know, whatever else. It was. So I don't think on your side there should be any feeling that you haven't been generous with offering to concede on certain things. But those in favour of Clause 121, Section 225, please raise your hands. And three, those opposed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The matter remains as it is, and the proposal is not accepted. We do have a another proposal, which we all didn't take account of. But I am carrying on where was I? We've done that, yes. Okay, 121, agreed or disagreed? We've just done it. It was a proposal. Okay, the actual proposal that is sitting here on page 12. Those in favour will agree, those who disagree. Yeah, you need to say that, okay. Clause 1118 4. Now, when we finish with the long title, we're not actually finished. Please recall that. Long title on page 2, after the 7th line, to insert. To further provide companies trading under insolvent circumstances to extend the grounds of disqualification as directed to provide for the terms of office of members of the tribunal. Right at the beginning, that long title. Are you all there? You can't agree to something you haven't found. And that is a it's such a long title, I don't know if we've got enough breath. But anyway, we're not finished because we have requested two things, first of all, from DTR, which were read verbally here, but I've asked for them to be issued to you, were they? Now,
yes.
Verbally here, yes. But everything finally must go in writing, okay? Clause 2, on page 9 from line 20 to omit and substitute, do you remember the aggregate issue? It arose out of an amendment. Well, I was told to put it forward. Okay, right. I'm glad you're more awake than me. Clause 118 2. Well, hang on, can I read it? I don't know what you were reading to. Which one is it? Any matter filed with the pending before the register. Oh, this is the one you read to, was it? Mr. Hercules, advocate, earlier. Yes, that's the one you read into the mic.
Yes, that was something else.
Well, what? Well.
Clause 23, if I remember correctly, just
double. Yeah, it was clause 23, Jay. The correction which I replaced the committee earlier.
Can I go to
Right. We now need to come to clause 14. Yes. That's what I needed just now, yes.
Well, no, this is actually a quite complex thing. Because some of the substantive provision of this act seems to create new parameters which may be more favorable. And when it is said that any matter pending the register, before the register, must be dealt in terms of the old act, if there is a, and I'm not sure what would react, but I assume that there is a matter which relates to conduct on the side of a company which is non-compliant conduct under the old Act, which would be compliant conduct under the new Act. Why should it be done in terms of the old Act if whatever matter they were not complying then, they are complying now? I mean, it's a very complex matter, which I'm not, I for one am not comfortable with just signing it off.
Your point is taken. This was explained, but sometimes if we're not all here, then it's difficult. Honourable Harris, is that a hand up? Okay. Right, DTI, I think some folks were not present. Can you just go through it?
Madam Chair, once again, I'll try to be very brief. This is actually a very important provision, and it is very beneficial to the companies. Should this amendment not be adopted, if we reflect on the existing provision on page 51 of the bill, as it reads at the moment, page 51, in line 38, it provides for any kind of matter that is currently pending before the registrar, such as an application or any other matter. Those matters will, upon the commencement of the new Act, it still has to be considered by the registrar in terms of the provisions of the 1973 Act. If the principle is not accepted, the consequence would be that all those companies, having filed those matters with the registrar, would, after the commencement of the new Act, have to bring all their matters or their applications afresh, clearly resulting in material breach to those companies. I'm almost a bit embarrassed in saying this, but maybe it does no more than to demonstrate that we're all just fallible human beings. In drafting this provision, we failed to see or to grasp at that point in time that the very same principle that applies in respect of matters pending under the old Companies Act, so to speak, does also apply in respect of those matters that will be pending under the provisions of the Close Corporations Act that stand to be amended by Schedule 3 to this Act, which is on page 352 of the Principal Act. So the very same consequence will result for those companies. All those matters or applications will have to be brought fresh if this amendment is not approved. So we only plead on our part that for the sake of not causing prejudice to so many companies having these pending matters, that this proposal be considered by the Honourable Committee. Thank you very much.
Honourable Embassy. I'm not stupid, I understand all this. It's all obvious. But the fact is that provision changes, things are brought under, filed under the old Act, and you won't do it the old Act, you act if they're compliant. See, I don't know, and one would need to have a full record, full list of what it is that you would apply for. It's just brought a very wide ranging in application, and I'm sure that 89%, 90% of the matters would fall within the category old Act, apply the old Act, it's carried out under the old Act, and it's fact. here it says they must be carried under the old act. And usually when you go from a in a transition of this nature, you get a provision which gives the option to the company to have things done under the new act if they so choose. By giving two roles, if there is something in which it would be more beneficial for the matter to be dealt under the new act, if it's a compliance aspect, if the requirement has been lowered, if the form is different, then it could be dealt with under the new act. And anyone builds some flexibility, whether it's a matter of adding an additional form, redoing the form, with this being the default principle, I'm just concerned that by this being the only principle, what was lost under the previous act needs to be dealt in terms of the previous act, pending before the register, before the previous act. We may have a range of unintended consequences with no escape clause, no way out, other than pulling it back and refining whatever is possible. If there is a deadline, you can't do it.
Honorable Ambrosini, these issues came up broadly much earlier. You see, now, it's been raised over and over again. What about those issues? Right when we first went to the V upstairs, while we were still in the middle of some of the public hearings, it's not a new issue. But regrettably, you haven't always been with us. That's the problem.
You are the only one who's been here all the time, you know, it's good that Member Ambrosini is here today, so that in case we are making mistakes here and there, we can attend to them. But so we appreciate that. But I wanted to say what you're saying, Colleague Chair, that it's not the first time that we. I think that the department has well explained and motivated. I would think that we should proceed forward and not further entertain Member Ambrosini's concept. I mean, we have understood them. He also understands. He has expressed he understands. Just that having understood, we still think we must the department's
and I've already put it on the table. Now, we need to see if there are seconds. We have someone to propose, someone to propose within the amendment. Either you object or you propose, or we're going to do something. Right, can we have people to second it? We've got one, two, seconding it, three. Right, can we have people, are there any objections? One objection. Right, any abstentions? No abstentions. I'll put it to the vote. Those in favour of this amendment, raise your hands. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven. Abstention. I'm not sure we haven't actually got the count then. Did you support the vote? With a negative. Did you also have a negative then? So you either have an abstention, a support, or that. Which one are you going for?
I'm not sure.
Can I put you down?
Abstention, yes.
Abstention. Honourable Harris, can I be clear? It was a vote against. Two votes. Sorry about that, but you know, they got so particular downstairs, I even had to beg them to take my blue slip the other day. You know, when it comes to these things, they are so strict, I had to offer almost a little cup of tea.
In the committee can be risky business, but we've discussed and also the
principle we have no cause. That is just maybe a method of bringing that norm that we have in subsection 3, take it up in subsection 2.
They believe in, as their understanding there, it continues to capture their attention, all right. The decision is over to us. We're dealing only with two. We've got a proposal. It is, well, no, there's proposed there. Can we see seconders for this proposal right now? We have...
See, it's getting late.
Now, on a very serious note, Honourable Albert, please, if you could just
cell phone down and then a job, all those concluded. Now, can I formally not repeat the agency's position?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We read the issue of trading under insolvency companies was very critical because we don't deal with insolvency. It's not the issue of only paying the debt. It's the ability also to raise capital to get a cost. If you are insolvent, you're not going to be able to raise capital. And then if you can look at the budget speech of the minister, there are a lot of incentives he has come up with, of which other people can really be reckless and then try to work because they want to get cream off those things. But from what has happened, and then by the fact that the DTI says that they are comfortable, although I think it's a bad precedent that they are going to draft things here in committee without doing a thorough job out of that, let's hope that if they are comfortable because they are the implementers, we're going to hold them to account for that. We are going to hold them to account for that. So if they are comfortable, we'll take it, it's fine. We'll take it, it's fine.
Formally, I'm sorry, can you propose that amendment, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The fear proposes the adoption of this amendment as I read it before. Must I read it again? Okay, all right. So in clause 14, in section 22, in subclause 2, delete the words "or is trading under insolvent circumstances" and substitute the words "or is not able to pay its debts as it becomes due and payable in the normal course of business."
In favour of that, raise your hand.
Sure.
No one's leaving, we are not closing. Please. Now, I've got to leave as well, so just the time. Now, what we are doing is this. Have we passed all these amendments? Or whatever. Right. Now, I now need to formally read something. Please bear with me. I am born with you. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry on the Companies Amendment Bill B40-2010, National Assembly, Section 75, dated the 10th of March 2011. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the subject of the Companies Amendment Bill B40-2010, National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it and classified by the joint tagging mechanism as a Section 75 bill, and having obtained permission from the Assembly in terms of Rule 2493B to inquire into amending other provisions of the Companies Act, number 71-2008. See the minutes of Proceedings of National Assembly, 9th March 2011, page 586. Report the bill with amendments, B48-2010. Are you in agreement with that? I've only heard one yes, so presumably you don't want your amendments to go through, the three of you.
Yes.
Are you in agreement with this?
Yes.
Yes. We're saying yes. Agreed.
Never yes.
Okay. Yes. Honourable Vanderbilt.
I just wanted to make 100% sure, because we've made amendments on the amendments, is it still going to be called the same thing?
Remember, we're only adopting the amendments now. I'll explain the practicalities. It says here as proposed. No, it will say as agreed. But I couldn't say as agreed. I would have had a walkout here. desired and proposed. So the next one you see in the hearts will be as agreed. I know that means you did not agree on everything, but there was a vote. And what I think you've done, Honourable Harris, Honourable Ambrosini, Honourable Albert, and Honourable Coxey, is to see that you can put amendments here on adoption day and get some change. So I want to personally thank all of you. I want to wish you well in the debate. And I want to say we will have a robust bill, I believe. Honourable Ambrosini, are you trying to have the last word?
No, I'm not. You asked the question, do you know, and I was trying to answer. Do you agree? And I haven't answered, so if I may, I will answer for myself. First, but before I answer it, I mean, I think I need to share in the gratitude. You've been an extraordinary chairman, and I'm sorry that I was not as present as I wished I was in with other years, but you've been extraordinary. You're good. I'm going to abstain because I'm going to bring it back to my focus for Monday. There's been a given take. It's a 6 year. I don't know whether McCarthy will is going to be that the given take is sufficient to warrant our support. The concern we express is a real concern, whether that will translate into nominal opposition of the bill. Of course, we want to appeal on the section in the House. I cannot tell you. So I'm not in the position of agreeing to that report. I wish to be more of a way of staying and preserving an opposition in light of the concern we express in the debate and the single voting position. This specific word of language to the code of terms of the rules which allow minorities, that require minority views to be recorded when reporting about a bill.
Thank you, and I thank you for the kind words, and we will respect the position. Is there anyone else who wants to make a decision now?
Okay. I would also like to reserve the right for another very simple reason. We came, a group of parties came with seven proposals today. Five of those seven were supported by the consultant from UGT, whose word has almost unilaterally been accepted every single time. Notwithstanding that, in the committee today, for some reason or other, despite the fact that she supported five of the seven proposals, on balance, we only succeeded in two of the seven. So I suspect that there may be an extraordinary amount of prejudice in the meeting today that isn't in line with the way that the spirit of these debates over the last few weeks. So I also reserve the right to consult with my party for my next report.
So you want your position reported. Right. Is there anyone else who wants to have a position noted? Honourable Fadebe?
Thank you, Chairperson. On behalf of the African National Congress, we prefer the right in taking you for worship of this process. It was a very tedious process, sometimes irritating. Sometimes irritating, but we were able to maintain a group throughout. Also, at the same time, thank the members of the other parties, because I feel that their input, what they did, that they input the quality of the deal. I think that we learned a lot from them. I think that in the future, if we are working like that, South Africa is definitely going to become a better place to live in, because we are not only legislating for today, but we are legislating for the future. I think that as we move around the world, we'll be able to raise our heads high that the act which governs our companies is one of the best in the world. I think that's true, the quality input, even also from the side of the department, the amount of work and effort which they put, the amount of the things which we made them go and repeat and redo. I think their stamina actually proves that we are having a new cadre of the public sector, which is able to respond to the needs of the people as we are driving for the people-centered society. So I'd like to thank each and everyone for the wonderful work of your time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Coxey.
Chair, I just want to thank you as a person and the Chair for how you have dealt with this matter. I have served on a number of committees, and it's very rare that you find a bill done in detail in the way that I'm
I must say the accommodation has been overwhelming in terms of accommodation. I remember at the initial stages when people were coming to give during public hearings, there was a number of them who were indicating that they have presented a note of their views to the department and they have not seen that in the thing. And I can tell you if they can look at this thing today, most of them will see that they have been communicated. I must say that we may not have agreed on everything, but I think overall we have actually generally agreed in this committee. And I would really like to thank you in particular. And the changes that have been done actually are actually the ones that are taking us forward on this committee. The bill is going to go through if there are any matters. When someone is doing a debate in the house, we will highlight those areas, okay, but generally, there is generally I ask to support the bill. It does not stop me from hope to identify those areas that are being there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Cossey. I don't know if Honorable Cossey
wants to speak. Thank you, Chair. Yes, I also want to mirror the words spoken by the other members, honourable members, that you have really led this committee well through this treacherous path and difficult path of adopting this bill. It's a huge piece of work, it's a complex piece of work, and one of the largest bills acts in South Africa. That bill is very important for South Africa's future. And, while we don't agree with everything that transpired here, I do think that if this sentiment could have been carried through into other committees in Parliament, we might actually get things working much quicker in South Africa. I think we all share the view that what we're doing here is very important for South Africa, and we cannot just play political games. Honourable Harris has indicated, we only succeeded in 2 out of the 7 amendments, which is a bit worrying because we thought we might be there. We were quite excited in the beginning of seeing that the legal eagle was actually concurring with many of our positions. So that's disappointing. But having said that, I think it's time to go on, and I do have a mandate from my party, so we will support this bill going forward and let it be tested in the open market, so to speak, and if we need to make amendments down the line, we can address that. Thank you.
As Honourable Albert covered now, my issues are relating to the 7 amendments we brought today. It is frustrating that only 2 of them were adopted. But I remember thinking when I was reading through this, preparing for the meeting, thought back on all of the hearings that we had that you chaired so ably. And in fact, a large number of requests from stakeholders were very generously adjusted for and accommodated by the department. There's some very talented people on the other side of the room. I have to thank them. And also thank you for your able chairing and despite the trouble with certain members of the opposition. So it's been a very worthwhile process, despite the frustration of today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I do want to thank you again and to echo Honourable Hadebi's words. You actually don't realise how much you did contribute. If I go through the Principal Act and others, and I note your names are against these points, and what came through, you may have forgotten. And maybe if we didn't change it, it was already changed by DTI anyway, etc. So I think we must all accept that there has been a large degree of input that I think stakeholders will benefit from, all those stakeholders. I looked at some of the comments coming out in the press here, and a lot of them, yes, there are some reservations, I must acknowledge that, but for the most part, they're looking forward to seeing those who have followed in some manner the progress of the spin. But that is not simply thanks to a chair. It is thanks to every member. And some, as I've said before, have participated more actively and directly than others. But all have participated, newcomers including to the committee. Thank you very much. And I really, as I say, I asked finally from my secretary, have I complied with him? I have one more thing to do. Report adopted with DA and IFP abstaining. Am I correct? Yes. So, members, thank you once again. Please give my apologies to your wives and fiancés and your partners. And I want to thank the DTI most sincerely for staying the course with us. I did the least work. All of you there did the most at the table here. And I want to personally place on record Mr. Herman's bill and coordinating our work and steering the chair in the right direction to get to a meeting and to follow procedure, even when I was disinclined to do that. And to thank Ms. Herling, who truly I expect if you don't have your master's, you'll get it any day, and you can ask to do your dissertation on the company. Thank you. I know, thank you. There's also my dear Zabili, the researcher, who sometimes thinks he's of no value because I'm not always ringing him. But I think researchers need to think more than to be contacted by telephone. And I have allowed you to exercise your thinking capacity in the application to the research we have. Good night and thank you.
No meeting tomorrow, right?